your manger dogs. Swab the decks and hoist the sails. The guns on board be needing some proper manning. Pieces of eight and a fine wench on your arm. If you work, be not too shoddy. Be careful not to flounder too badly, though, or you may have to dance the hempen jig as we see you to Davy Jones. Jeffy, my boy, on with the show.
Ah, shiver me timbers. To our listeners from across all regions of the planet, welcome once again aboard the Robin Hood, flagship to the world's one and only cooperatively inspired charity podcast network, WPRPN. Magically marking the spring equinox, congratulations. You've tuned in to our 99th episode of Pirate Radio Podcasts. I'm your host, as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Reaching out, pirate hands across the water, this time to an undisclosed location, just outside the world's most heavily guarded, not-so-secret seed vault of Svalbard, Norway. Our guest for this week's pre-recorded affair is none other than the anonymously vaping host of Forum Borealis, the one and only Mr. Al Borealis. For those who've yet to investigate their richly treasure-laden YouTube archive, Forum Borealis is a paradigm-expanding podcast exploring controversial, marginalized, innovative, obscure, anomalous, and system-critical topics, producing in-depth conversations with some of the most renowned authors, scholars, researchers, and free thinkers of the age. Their shows typically cover a multitude of areas, including history, culture, current events, philosophy, science, and parapolitics. Finally managed to connect with Al Borealis via Norway, of all places, if you can believe that, folks. So this is really a treat all the way from Korea on through to Norway. And I'm not sure how you pronounce the name of the actual town or city you live in, although I think there's a bit of a something going on as far as seed banks are concerned. What is it, Svalbard or how do I Svalbard?
Well, we say Svalbard. But in English, I've heard people say Svalbard. No, that's not the town. And I'm often traveling. I'm often, as you probably noticed, I was in Paris last time we spoke. So I wouldn't say I would be pinpointed to one place exclusively, but it is a mysterious place, isn't it? And all of northern Norway is, Norwegians doesn't know this, but America, Pentagon, CIA is running the show. We're there. What's it called? You know these harp things?
Oh, yeah.
They got placed out in our country.
Sure.
But yeah, great to connect, Jaffe.
It's quite something because we've been playing kind of a Twitter tag and connected on Skype.
And I don't even use Twitter.
Yeah. So been looking forward to this in a big way. You know, we first actually stumbled across your channel. Oh, Jesus, got to be like a couple of years ago now, at least, I'd imagine. Immediately, of course, it caught our eye because of the quality of shows that you were producing and the guests you were managing to bring on board. How long has Forum Borealis been around?
Oh, we're still a child, but I'm aiming for becoming a wonder child. Now, we started, I think, summer of 15, and it was just coincidental. For the first time, I had a little spare time. I never do that. I'm always busy. So, and I wanted to talk with certain people. I've always, I did work in radio when I was younger, nothing big, just local radio. So I had a little experience. But I've been talking with interesting people all my life, people all over the world, okay? Big shots in different areas that I'm interested in. You know, I always thought, oh, if you could be there, if I relay the conversation or whatever, oh, you should have been with us when that happened or whatever. I always missed the proverbial fly on the wall. I always wished it could be there, just so other people could enjoy what I enjoyed, you know what I mean? So that's what I did. I put a bug up and I started rolling the conversation. Conversation, that's all, what is all about, Jaffe, and I hope we can talk a little more about that today.
Yeah, exchange of ideas. And the pre-interview, of course, we were going over this a little bit as far as how we...
You call it a sound check. It wasn't... No, it was a sound check, wasn't it?
It was a real...
Well, the Letterman show.
Yeah. So, one of the things that came up, and I'm actually looking at this on my screen right now, the desktop, is a pirate story, because that is the theme to the show that we produce here every week. And of course, you being based out of Norway, there's bound to be a few historically pirate legends and so forth from that region. But you had actually mentioned something about the Pirate Bay.
Yeah, you inquired. But I want to say about pirates, by the way. Sure. I want to say that I'm actually going to have a pirate show, like a classical pirate, because it's so misunderstood and it's so interesting if you really look into the real deal. And you'll find what we imagine of the pirates. I mean, they were the revolutionaries. No, we know this now. We know they were radical politically. They were idealists. They were organized collectives. They were subversives. They were often, abandoned from the nation, civilization, society there came from and stuff. Some were escaped slaves, whatever. But it was this mix of all kinds of people, from class, from experience, from culture. But there was also a spiritual aspect to the pirates that many doesn't know. I mean, the Jolly Roger and is the same related symbol to the Masons. And of course, people say, oh, the Masons, they're an overclass establishment. Yeah, today they become a museum. There's nothing left there. But once upon a time, the Masons were actually fighting the fight against the man. Do your history homework, people. So there's a very interesting thing in history there. So we're going to cover it eventually. But, Pirate Bay. No, you just asked pirates. So I would say my brother, the Pirate Bay people are Scandinavians. So one of them is actually Norwegian and a friend of my brother. So that was my little brag there.
Somebody was on the run there often, I guess they're on the lam, as it were, in Cambodia or Thailand or...
What's they got him too.
Mm-hmm. Rendition or...
It's America. This is the same as the Assange. Sweden has had a very corrupt government, just like Norway, by the way. If it depends who's in charge, but the intelligence and the military has America, Pentagon-friendly forces. And so America say jump, and they jump. There was so much shade. You should see the documentary. It's completely corrupted. They wanted to crush them. They got the order from over there to crush them. And so they did everything they could. And you see the same in Assange case. I mean, people actually think today, he raped or he actually slept with someone. And so they just used that to take him. No, it's just as fucking fabric. Can I swear?
Just go ahead. Not a problem. It's a pirate ship. Come on, man. Of course you can.
I don't know where this goes out. Is it mainstream radio?
It's the George Carlin rule of thumb, and that if a little, just kind of tasteful, timing is everything, so if you really want to emphasize a point, go for it. But we prefer that it's not like just one F-bomb after the other, but it's a pirate ship. Fill your boots.
Cool. So, I wish I knew a pirate swearing, but anyway. So, no, I was just saying the whole thing is fabricated against Assange. These two women, one of them regrets and trying to, they didn't even file the report themselves. They were used, exploited. And that is one of them, I think, was paid off. I think she's an asset. She suddenly got a huge, nice deal down in Israel, a new house and everything. Where did she get all this money? And the other one, she's against the charges. And it's not even charges. That's a weird thing. First off, he's not even charged. He's wanted for questioning. That's what people doesn't know. It started out with, he raped. But today, all that's left against Assange is he's questioned for sexual misconduct. That's it. Nothing to do with rape, no charges, no nothing. And they don't care because they're not, the goal isn't to, he did something wrong and now we're going to write it. No, it was always bullshit. All they need is a practical, juridical alibi to get him to Sweden. Because if they get him to Sweden, he'd be extradited to America. That's all what it's about. That's why he's stuck in that embassy. Now, they haven't managed to get him out that way. So now they're trying to crush the government in, is it, do you know whose embassy? Is it Colombia?
Ecuador, it's, I believe.
Ecuador, right? Mm-hmm. So now they're trying to get one of the America puppets, you know, good old CIA operation, Banana Republic operation. So they almost managed to get a new government, America-loyal government down there. I don't know the latest development. So if they can get him that way, even better. And we will never hear about the Swedish thing. So my point is, the Swedes are completely corrupted, as is the Norwegians. He wouldn't be safer here. Snowden tried to come to Norway. Nope, our government is corrupted too. We're all in the America Pentagon grip.
New World Order. It's the Kraken. This is kind of what we refer to it here via the Robin Hood. And I'm not sure if you're aware or not, that is the name of the ship. So, and that's the reason for that too, which we could maybe get into.
As long as I don't have to go around in tights, I'm with you.
Pretty much can dress whichever way you want. We don't really, has no real fashion code or dress code whatsoever. So.
It's just like the real pirates. Everyone was an individualist. They looked like a ragtag company because they all had their own style.
Yeah, laissez-faire. You know, the only thing is that when the captain, in the heat of battle, that's when the captain kind of, you listen to what the captain has to say and order, because it's the heat of battle and everyone's got to be acting together in concert to get the job done. But other than that, outside of that, the time where you find yourself engaged in some sort of, you know, exchange of fire, that just do your thing, man.
Good point. Because the captain is a function. Unlike if we went back to the British, where it was a role, he was like the dictator or the tyrant. But in a free society, you still need the functions to operate. And if we need to cooperate, and if we need to focus certain roles, certain responsibilities into certain people, fine, let's divide the workload and the responsibility for the task. But, you know, you could choose a new captain or new this or new that. And we could also let the roles circulate. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. So, yeah. I'm not too familiar with that in a historical sense, although I'd imagine it would happen. A lot of, there was marooning from time to time. Captains would
sometimes, well, when they kill one captain, they need a new one, right?
You'd sometimes kill your captain, or if he was lucky, he would just...
No, the enemy kills your captain, so you need a new one, right? And then you need to be prepared.
But it would work both ways, too, not just the enemy. Sometimes the crew would, like a mutiny kind of deal, violent mutiny.
Power went to your head, boss. Sorry. I'm going to take over the ship.
Exactly. Like Captain Kidd, for example. I've been listening to a little bit of his story as of late. And actually, if you're interested, what I could do is make a note here and upload the audio book version of what I've been listening to for you to the web. And
yeah, because I'm looking into Kidd now. You know why? Oak Island. Because he's actually involved in, I know it's a Knight Templar and a Rosicrucian thing and Bacon and Shakespeare and all that stuff, but it's also tied to pirates and Masons. And some of these pirates were Masons, and some of these pirates were aware of what had gone down in remote past, and that's why they used it for even for pirate treasure. So Captain Kidd is very interesting.
A lot
because
of
he's connected to the island.
Maybe even Blackbeard, too, you know. So as far as that goes, I really have no idea. But he did sail up along the Carolinas is where he basically operated out of for a few years there. You know, it's interesting, too, because just recently it dawned on me that we just passed the 300th year anniversary of the peak of piracy in the Caribbean. That was the Golden Age, as it was known. 1717, I don't know, historians, that's where they draw the line, I guess. So there were some major developments that took place around that time. But let me just quickly say, too, I'm not sure if you're aware of this or not, but apparently a very significant number of the transatlantic slave traders, of whom many were, of course, you could call them pirates, although they would also, just as many instances, I suppose, be operating under these so-called letters of marque, you know, the privateers, like, the queen, I got the queen's blessing here, so I'm not a pirate.
Yeah, I wouldn't call them real pirates, because in my book, to be a real pirate, you have to go against the man. Many of them were pirates in the way that, like smugglers, okay, we're just breaking the law. The powers were looking the other way, some of them at least, because they needed this.
Oh, yeah, that too, sure.
Trades, right? So what are you really risking? You just capturing a bunch of weaker people who can't defend themselves and bringing them and getting some money. Well, sure, it's a part of the whole big, huge deal we today maybe look at as one homogenic thing, but it was really many, many different things. And many of those slave traders were people from Denmark and Norway who just wanted to make money. So they just joined these local companies and we went down there. And we are not blamed for the slave trades because as a nation we weren't participating, but as private participants, there were lots of Scandinavians too. So I wouldn't call them pirates.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. That's something, you know, I'm fascinated by this. And whenever I have the opportunity, I do try to read and research, investigate. I really should know a lot more than what I do and, you know, be able to take a more definitive position or stance on these issues. But when it came to the transatlantic slave trade, a very significant number of them were Jewish. That's what it
was. Yeah, I believe it was back then. Who had the money to invest? It's all historic.
Yes. There you go.
It's not that's a gene. Right. It's not a Jewish gene that manifested. It's the historic conditions that brought them in that position. Just like America, I mean, USA wasn't the worst place. If it now talking just, I mean, there's been so much slave trade in the world. Let's focus on African from the West Coast, you know. The worst part, you can actually see a map online. It's pretty cool. You can see every ship and how many people were taken from where in Africa. You click play and then you see like a dot and then a new dot. And then and at one point it's like a swarm. That's at the height because you're seeing it through hundreds of years. And then you see it cool down again and eventually just a few dots. That's a ship with. You can click on the dot and you can see how many people were there who run the ship. Now, my point is, most of them didn't go to USA. Most of them went to South America, especially, I think Brazil was one of the worst. And that's also where you find the worst treatment of slaves.
High casualty rate just on sailing across the Atlantic.
Imagine your immune system, you're lying there with hundreds of other people in their shit and you don't get proper food and everything. So people would die from diseases.
You betcha. And here's an important point for people to bear in mind. And some people listening to the audience, of course, are well aware of this, that it wasn't just Spielberg's Amistad is a classic example. When you have these Hollywood historical interpretations or portrayals of certain historical events and characters, which are totally just nonsense. And this is, that's one
otherwise known as propaganda.
Yeah. Hollywoodism or what have you. So yeah, blame Whitey and especially the white Christian Protestant or what have you went so much.
Well, I'm not Christian, so I don't care about that.
Right, right. Well, the point, and just to quickly finish here, the white Christian Protestants, so many of, as we understand, you look into it, I think people will discover, significant Jewish presence. Why wasn't Spielberg talking about that? But secondly, roots and so forth. They're Africans selling out other Africans. The same thing happened on the West Coast with the Indians in Canada. Same thing. They're selling
out. Look, it's the same thing. They're smarter today. They're still slaves. It's the same system, but they're much smarter. What they did was they realized, look, if we're doing this in the open, if we suppress people, be it slaves, workers, whatever, just elite, right? Then we risk backlash of revolution. So let's do this much smarter. Let's increase. The cake is getting bigger and bigger and bigger because we plunder everything. So let's give slightly more of the cake to our minions. And then they're dumbed down and fed and pleased. That's what happened as a result of all the revolutions. So the middle class was brought on board. Now, if you work in a factory, there will be someone in the factory selling you out. The leadership gets a few loyal idiots who do anything for money. And so suddenly, sorry, we're going to close down the factory because we're going to move it to a cheaper country. And, all the workers get shocked. Oh, why wasn't I informed, etc. But I mean, it's classical in all kind of hierarchies that you take a few of those who are at the bottom and you ally with them. It's the same as in Germany. You know, since you've been listening, that we are correcting the record for some of the notions about Second World War. So I'm not, buying the mainstream scenario. But that said, what I'm going to say now is kind of mainstream in a way, because let's not even discuss the gas chamber, but they did crack down on Jews. I mean, that's obvious. If you don't know that, you're lost in propaganda. But what they did also, like in the Warsaw ghetto, they took Jews and they gave them semi-police authority to round up and handle the ghetto Jews. All powers do this. They take traitors from the suppressed group and then make them work with them. So that happened in Africa too. And sometimes they used a tribe against another tribe. Yeah, we're going to crush your enemy tribe. Yeah, hooray, we're with you. When I've done that, then they turn on the first one. They did with the native Indians too. It's just basic warfare. Well, and the Muslims did slave trade too, by the way. All religions, all Abrahamic religions did slave
trade. Well, I was just going to say what Lenin referred to as useful idiots, very highly disposable individuals. So, and the Muslims, interesting to talk about that within the context of where you are. I'm not sure about Norway, but I know Iceland, there were some pretty extensive raids stemming from out of the Barbary Coast region, and they claimed over a period of I'm not sure how many years, maybe 50 or 100, over a million Caucasian white European individuals basically were taken into slavery, servitude, women raped, as typically is the case, of course.
Let's deal with the rape thing very quickly. All women since the beginning of history has been raped in war and in all kinds of conflicts. They do it systematically. It's like a way to crush the, because you have to crush a culture too. That's the thing. That's what people doesn't get. They think it's all about money and physical power. No. If you see the modern slave trade, the globalism, how it's screwing up country after country, the big, big key to them succeeding or not is the culture. Because they have the actual power. If they really wanted to, they could lock down America today and turn it into a police state a la, you know, Gestapo and the Third Reich, or worse. They could, but these cowards are terrified of the backlash. That's the worst thing, if they ever should be charged for war crimes or whatever. So what they need to do, first of all, to keep this sham of a democracy or an open society going, is to control the culture. And that's why internet and the kind of piracy we're representing is so dangerous to them, because we're actually creating, you know, newspapers, TV, radio wouldn't be dying today if it wasn't for internet.
That's right.
The fact that you and me are having a genuine conversation and people listening in hears and understands, it recognizes it. This is how I'm talking in my life. Those guys are talking like I do. That's what's winning the culture. We are taking over and influencing. So they have the power, but we have, you know, the lost power. We don't give attention to their little creations. We create our own. That's why they have to try to crush our tools, because it's not a fair game. You know what I mean?
We have not watched television in this house for the past 5-6 years. So, yeah. Hashtag Televalium.
But you still have a television?
Well, the USB goes there with the torrents, right? You watch, like, the movies and documentaries you download off of YouTube or whatever.
Why don't you just do like me? Get a huge monitor, computer monitor. You can watch anything there. Wow. You don't need a TV.
And especially one of these, well, what the hell are they? LG, Samsung, smart TVs. Anytime you see smart folks, think stupid and think spy, you know, because really that's what it is. That's what it is. And you
can, same for the meters.
Anytime you see it, it's stupid spy shit that you should throw out and be done with. We are so dumbed down. We are so conditioned. And people, maybe such as ourselves, a little bit kind of red-pilled maybe in the sense of breaking the conditioning. And I suppose that puts you on the authorities' radar simply because, do you ever see the They Live movie? We've got one here. We've got one that's woken up from the dream. So they've broken the conditioning. But
it's almost not a metaphor.
Well, it's not. No, it's not. So, well, we could go anywhere pretty much with this conversation today. One thing, since we're on the issue of piracy, and we're just, of course, scratching the surface when it comes to any of these issues, and I'm doing my best not to talk over you, although you did in the lead up to things here. We first kind of just had a quick little sound check there for the first few minutes before we decided to record.
I insisted you talk over, didn't I?
Yeah. We're having a coffee shop conversation here over a couple thousand miles.
I need to taste my own medicine, you know?
Well, I don't know. You said any interview without a hardball is like no interview at all kind of deals. Your way of looking at things.
Yeah, right? Kind of. That depends. I don't care. It can be hardball or not. Because I'm thinking like this. I'm not afraid of being wrong. So then there will be no hardball. Because if you have to lie to prove a point, you don't have a point. So I don't care if someone challenges whatever. Either I can educate them, or I will be enlightened. That's why, that's explaining my libertarianism. It's a classical tease meets antithese, and something better, a transformation appears, and we get a synthese. But anyway, I was insisting you interrupt me and talk as if we are just sitting on a coffee shop, because my experience is that, first off, that's what I want to listen to, natural conversations, not these Because I get it all the time, or now that we've become a little more popular and grown our audience a little more, I get a lot of new people who have no idea about our concept. They came because of, let's say, the Antarctica show or whatever, right? And so they don't know what they're coming to. And then they, first off, what's this guy with the weird accent? Then why doesn't he shut up? Now, I'm trying to tell them, because they say, hey, we don't want to listen to you. It's not about you, it's about the guest. And also, and that's true, of course. And they say, oh, you just want to talk because you want to hear yourself. You're full of yourself. Can I straighten out those 2 points now that I have the chance?
The floor is entirely yours.
My point is, first off, if it was about me, I wouldn't even be anonymous. I would do like everyone does. And I would also just launch rants like people do. I occasionally rant at the end of the show. But it's not about me. I don't need attention. I got enough attention in my life for my ego to last till I die. So that's off. It's about the contents. Now, why doesn't I shut up? Because if you just do a one-liner interview, which I find very boring, it's like I have a lot of questions here prepared, and then I give you one line and you lecture back, and I give you another line and you lecture back. That's so artificial and boring. Never happens anywhere in life. And you're kind of forcing your guest to turn into some kind of performance mode, because it's not natural for him either to just sit there and rant. If I challenge you, it can be challenged, like you said, it can be hardball, it can also be substantiating what I guess said, because nobody can think of everything. But if we're two heads taking a subject and deconstructing it, it helps to have someone on the sideline just throwing in like a sidekick. And then you also, as you know, as a host, you influence the direction. You're usually much more subtle than people understand. Many people just think we're putting on the on button and the conversation just flows. But a host has a lot of responsibilities to influence the outcome. And that's why I sometimes inject not myself, but ideas and knowledge and questions and interesting points. Because if I didn't have a mic here, I would still do it. Yeah, but why this and not that? Oh, yeah, but I heard that, you know. And if people can't handle that, then run back to George Norrie and Coast to Coast and jerk off to that, okay? Podcast ain't for you then. The reason podcasts are crushing traditional radio is precisely because people are doing anything. They're swearing, they're being themselves. It's all up for grabs. There's no rules, really. It's just put on the mic and let's see what we can create here together. Do you catch my drift?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty anarchistic, I think, if I got the word right. So very much driven by and ruled by anarchy, which is kind of no rules at all. So this is a pre-recorded conversation, just to let people know. And the reason being, of course, is that because Al
so B, I can vape.
pardon me? Come again?
So I can vape.
Yeah, you can vape all you want, man. Vape away. It's a vaping show.
I talk
show
better if week. I can vape and have coffee at the same time.
You can vape, just don't rape. Just don't get those consonants mixed up.
Is there any women on this pirate ship? If there's not any women, at least.
Oh, yeah. No, we got regular listeners and people that tune in, that for sure. So that we're open to that. Historically, it did cause problems, though, as you can imagine.
But this goes out. This doesn't just go out to YouTube, right? It also goes out to some kind of radio thing? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to archive it via the... We have a Podomatic archive account set up via podomatic.com. Having some technical issues there as of late too, and I'm wondering what the hell's going on, if it's not some cock blocking tied into this latest hysteria. And this, it's really quite something. That was one of the things I was hoping that maybe we could talk about, you know, just for a few minutes regarding censorship, you know, the culture wars and so forth, and the way they're cracking down. Yeah. You know, so that's where we upload things to. We're going to stream this out live this coming Friday night in the West. It'll be Saturday here in Asia. Post-production kind of feel to things. So we'll, you know, smooth things over as best we can, vaping and all.
I mean, this is almost as dramatic as when I was on Gordon Weiss' show. Runesip, he was all the way in the South. I was all the way in the North. Now it's kind of, I'm on the way in the West and you're all the way in the East.
Yes.
So we were stretching the tin can line the other way. Now it's horizontal.
Yeah, it's quite something. Vertical. So we're quite blessed in that sense. It's great. It's like having a long distance, I guess, telephone conversation as well, too, is one way of looking at it. Although, from the standpoint, and I know you're into this, we want to talk about your, well, not exactly dharmic, I'm not sure, you mentioned meditation, I'm not sure if that's, that doesn't seem to be Buddhism so much as Rosicrucianism and other esoteric traditions, and you've talked about Gurdjieff, I think, is what we heard, your
I mean, if you open that bag.
Well, before we do, I just, I know, I can believe that, so. We don't have a live audience, so just as far as the interaction, we draw them in every week. We're always playing off of our peanut gallery and people that are texting and chatting away via YouTube. We're trying to make that transition to DLive right now so we can tie that into Steemit as well. We've been gradually watching our income. They're just whittling it down, just nickeling and diming our income right down to zero. It's falling onto like a nosedive over the past number of months, you know. So
you mean to talk about YouTube now, or?
Yeah, I think we should launch a lot of it. People should get together and launch like a joint class action suit or something where we demand to be paid for the money that was owed to us rather than them welching on their promises.
The conservatives and the libertarians, now I'm using American political terms because it means different things up here, but those who are, you know, associated to the so-called right and the Republicans, they say, yeah, but you can just launch, you can let the market decide. If a YouTube is screwed over, well, just wait for the competition to come and offer something better. But it doesn't work like that, because that presupposes an open market, a classical kind of libertarian economic society. We don't have that. Our economy is more controlled today than the goddamn Soviet economy was. It's just that we don't have this sham of this illusion of a market open. We have a market, kind of a display market, a decoy market, where we think, but that's being influenced and it's all corrupted. So that's why nobody has, because it's such a market. If somebody with real money wanted to make the new huge internet thing that would make Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Amazon and all that look like yesterday's news, they would launch what YouTube originally was. But they're not doing it because there's the culture aspect in addition to the economical aspects. It's not just, oh, let's make money, we're venture capitalists and we don't care about the contents. They care about the contents, because Donald Trump was elected for one, and Bernie Sanders almost crushed Hillary. They had to cheat to stop him. And Ron Paul was the first one in that wave. He was cheated too. And that's all to do with the culture, because they had no money. They had no backers from the establishment. It was all grassroots. It was all, we are using internet. And especially YouTube has been essential for all kinds of things. So now they figured, okay, we can't just let money decide here. We have to control this thing. So Google goes into YouTube. First, Google themselves are taken over by the globalists, and then they're going into YouTube and screwing that. And then we don't see any worthy alternative to YouTube. I guess Minds may be the closest. At least Minds have their shit together in terms of ideals and ethics and practice and stuff. But I'm still, look, I'm going to, what you say, escape, not escape, but like refugees do. What do? They...
I did do a lot of things. I don't know what.
Yeah, but they escape. Isn't that what you call it?
When they leave their country of
origin? Yeah, when they leave. What's that called? Leaving, abandoning something. Anyway, you know what?
Vacate, I guess, yeah.
Vacate, maybe. That sounds a lot more voluntary. But anyway, I'm going to do that with my show too, from YouTube eventually. But what I'm doing right now is I'm building up audience. So I'm going to still ride the YouTube train while it's still working, because I think they will crack us down sooner or later anyway. But while we are there, I'm going to build up the audience bigger. And then, hopefully, some alternative would have manifested. Because I know there is today, but it's very experimental. I'll leave it to the others to try it out to see if it works. And when we have a very clear alternative, if we do get it, then I'm going to emigrate, is probably the word I was looking for, and immigrate to that new manifestation. And as a part of that, we're going to also spread our Forum Borealis shows out on different podcast platforms and stuff. But so far, I'm sticking with YouTube, not because I'm supporting the direction it's going. I mean, who supports suicide? But just because of my own agenda.
Which is what exactly? I'm not sure if you laid that out.
Well, like I told you, is to build up a bigger audience, right. Mm-hmm. So we can afford getting to one of those smaller, because if the big ones, when they emigrate, if all the big ones emigrated to the same place, you would have another YouTube, provided that the tools were working. And that's the biggest problem right now. All these alternatives, they don't have good enough tools. There's this guy, he's called The Hated One, a channel on YouTube. I recommend everybody checking it out. He has excellent shows, almost no subscribers, and pretty new though. Very low listener, but very professionally done. He goes really into, and he's been evaluating the alternatives to YouTube. And so if you wonder what I mean, go and look at his channel, The Hated One. His arguments for why nothing per today can alleviate YouTube's role. Not even mine's. We discussed it, Jeffy, on email. But I'm hoping, do you know what's going on with mine's, by the way? Give us an update.
Yeah, we should talk about that a little more. We got so many things to get into here.
We don't have much time either, do we? How much do we have?
Yeah, we're going to, we've got just a few more minutes here, and we're going to have to check and make sure that we have not completely crashed our whole recording operation. But
we just begun. And are you halfway already?
Oh, yeah, it's about halfway. We're doing about, because it's a 90-minute show, right? So, and then
okay, I'll try to contain my rants.
Steam it. Do you have a Steam it account? I think I might have, I just mentioned that a few minutes ago, but it does kind of dovetail into the DTube or DLive streaming platform. And you can actually, as with Minds, you can generate points and credit by producing content through that means. And, you know, I think there's really a lot of great opportunity there. We, from our end of things here, could just manage to work the bugs out because of our streaming software. That would be great. That's the biggest stumbling block we have right now. Everything seemed to have been in order based on what the OBS technical staff were telling us, but I don't know what's going on. So we'll get back to that in the next day or so here and hopefully be able to transition over there without too much difficulty, and to hell with YouTube and the 25 yeah. cents or whatever it is that they owe us. But as I said, that class action suit would be kind of interesting if people could band together and actually just, even if just out of for symbolic reasons. But yeah, we want to talk about Minds. We also want to get a little bit more maybe into your backstory. We kind of touched on that a little bit. Maybe it'd be great if, you know, once again, if the audience was actually here and this wasn't strictly a pre-recorded affair, that we could have some more interaction there. They'd be maybe peppering us with a few more questions, but
that would be cool actually.
Well, yeah, we'll have to do it another time, man, where we can work things out with the schedule.
I guess I have to do the live thing then, right?
It's going to be kind of tough though, unless you're a bit of a night owl, I think, really, because we typically, it's, what is it, 1 o'clock in the morning? So no, hold it, 1 o'clock.
Oh, I'm a night owl. All right,
2 o'clock, I mean, in the morning, maybe in Norway.
Hey, in the winter there's no sun up here. If you go far enough north in Norway, there's 24 hours light. In the summer, the longest day would obviously be summer solstice, and the longest night would be winter solstice. That's 24 hours of darkness. And so there's this common in Norway, north of the polar circle, that people can have like mood disorders, depression, because they don't get light. And then, you know, if it's dark all the time, the only thing that reminds you of ordinary society is that shops open at a certain point and closes at a certain point, right? But if you're not in a 9-to-4 kind of mill maze, then, like I'm not, then night and day doesn't matter if you're far away north. So,
and how big of a community exactly then is Farbar?
No, that's, I'm not there 24 hours a day. I'm moving around a lot. And Norway, it's just a very small, it's mostly for, well, it's growing now more due to tourism than industry, but it's not even a formal part of Norway. They have their own kind of government going up there. Actually, more decentralized. And Russians are living there, and scientists and coal workers and different stuff, hoteliers. So that's just a small community. But this phenomenon I'm told you about works for half of Norway. You start where the polar circle is, pretty far south, actually. So you wouldn't have that in the big cities like Bergen and Oslo. There would, but it would be a tendency. Like I was in Oslo with a friend from America, and she said that, "Hey, geez, it's 11 o'clock in the night, and you still have daylight. That's so weird." She couldn't get over that. I was, "Oh, okay. So when does it go dark over there now?" "Oh, like 5-6 o'clock." "I see. I see." We just get used to different things. But it fucks with a rhythm, a natural rhythm.
And you see the Northern Lights, I guess, hence the Borealis. That's origin of the name, I suppose. And
yeah, well, Borealis really just means northern, but it is associated closely with stuff like the Aurora Borealis and Boreas, Northern Wind.
Yeah, you betcha. And you actually got a copy of the song that I recorded a number of years ago, too, didn't you?
Yeah. Now I just recall that's long ago you sent me your songs.
Couple months.
That's right. I was surprised how professional it was. It was really good stuff.
Enter into uncharted waters, virgin territory. The ways of her sweet treasures remain hidden behind a veil of secrecy. Adventurous spirit and wild at heart, baby, that's how I read ya. Just for the hell of it, I'm hopelessly enamored with such a mysterious creature. To unmask the Mona Lisa is to unleash an incredible beauty. I'm afraid that a power so great would surely tear out through me. Held up at a distance, light of the world, no fear of undue radiation. This aching heart, Romeo's dying for your magic show's personal invitation. Lover's legacy, flames of passion are stoking high, so uncontrollably. Dance with me now, little sister, lend the shadows your light. There's a lot of healing to be done, yeah, thanks to the land or the midnight sun. We're just meditating Aurora Borealis tonight. Aurora Borealis. You've been in contemplation, a goddess in the Garden of Eden, where earthly pleasures in moderation tie into any ticket to freedom. Hunting for haven in a heartless world, it's a question of shelter. You can't expect much from the city's pulse and pitch, knowing it's a living hell out there. Oh, 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 oh. Intangible, ethereal, the elusive lover's legacy. Flames of passion are stoking high, so uncontrollably. Dance with me now, little sister, lend the shadows your light. There's a lot of healing to be done, yeah, thanks to the land or the midnight sun. Just meditating Aurora Borealis tonight. Aurora Borealis. Parsley Sage. goddess, virgin territory. The ways of her sweet treasures remain hidden behind a veil of secrecy.
Scarborough Fair, just kind of magically.
Yeah. And that was a giveaway because I love Scarborough Fair. I love that tune. It's a traditional song.
You know,
so you had me.
Well, and here's the thing too. I put the song together. I don't play or nothing anymore. I've just totally completely shifted gears and my heart's just not in it. That was a certain phase in a time period of my life where I was focused on those things. But things, as Bob Dylan would say, things have changed. So, you know,
as they ever do, huh?
Yeah, but mystical, because I know you're quite a student of, you know, mystical arts or all things esoteric. I mean, right here on your Twitter, it talks about you being a yogi, hierophant, and philosophist. I'm not sure if that's a spelling edit or error.
No, it's not. Never call me a philosopher. I despise the so-called philosophers.
Philosophers
is a Greek word.
Yes, yeah.
Philosophy today, people think that's like an egghead who just thinks and teaches who thought what when. Okay? It's more actually like an history of ideas kind of subject. Our true philosophers, that's the original guys, they were actually kind of like pirates. People read a book called In the Dark Places of Wisdom by Dr. Peter Kingsley. They were a band of people who were into shamanism, they were into healing arts, they were into incubation where they let their consciousness go over to the other side and they brought something back from the realm of the gods. They were into, they would be what we called alchemists, yogis, prophets, healers, whatever. They're the origin to the druids, they're the origin to so much things. So that's what I mean with a philosopher. It's like a mage, a sage, a magician. And I mean, a sage who claims he's a sage is no sage. So, and I'm no sage, so maybe I should. That's why I'm claiming I'm. But yeah. It's the ideals to aspire towards. That's the point, right? Exactly. And it's also a way to make people aware of that is a concept out there called a philosopher. Or a yogi. Or a hierophant. So I just had to write something, so I wrote that.
It's interesting. that's great because I was wondering, like, I was going to tell you, ask you when we were doing the Twitter exchange, the Twitter ping pong, did you, is that a typo there? What's going on? So I'm glad you filled our listeners in and have clarified that. And, I mean, that's why they tune in and listen to our show, of course, because, you know, from time to time, there are these little gems or nuggets of knowledge. And
these philosophers, they were seafarers. They were exceptionally good at surviving in different ways. So they not just had a very interesting kind of spirituality philosophy going on there, but they also had very interesting lifestyles. In a way, they were the original pirates. So read that book. You really won't regret it. It's an easy read, actually. It's very poetically written. It looks more like, not prose, but what you say in English, opposite of prose.
Poetry.
Yeah, kind of. Not like it's rhymes. But it is a very soft way to present the facts. It's not like a very dry academic way. You see what I mean? He writes very engaging.
Did you say Peter Kingsley?
Yeah, that's his name. In the Dark Places of Wisdom. Because what he does, he's really a professor, a doctor in history. But he goes against the academic way of presenting how these things were. He's delved deeply into this and he's proven that it's more like a shamanic phenomenon. We learned today that the philosophers were like quarrelers. They were just, oh, I mean this. No, I mean that. And they don't agree and they don't understand each other. And they're discussing and they're discovering how stuff is through discourse. That's bullshit. That's what they do today. They didn't do that back then. That's not what they weren't like the Platon. He was running a goddamn mystery school, just like Hypatia, and they were crushed by the Christians and Abrahamic religions, but that's another story. It's all about gnosis, man. Gnosis is the ultimate, that's a spiritual kind of anarchism. It's You can connect directly with the source. You don't need a priesthood. They're just there to keep you away from the source and in touch with how things really is. And skim of it on the way. So take back your power on all levels in terms of physical power, actually do exercise, take care of your health, in terms of mental power, in terms of anything, economical, in society. So you really want to be a pirate. You have to be it on all areas. You can't just pick and choose some and then be conventionally a puppy in others. So that's why I'm opening the door to the... And you said like Buddhism, meditation, all that. No, look, meditation is just a tool that's been used in all religions. I don't favor any particular religion because I agree with the old adage that the pirate Madame Blavatsky launched, which goes like this. There's no religion higher than truth. That's my religion.
As it should be with any genuine seeker, I'd imagine.
Most people don't want truth.
Pardon
they
me?
Want to have life lies.
They want to have it spoon-fed to them by somebody else who will just tell them.
No, they don't want the truth at all. They want to give it speeches at parties. I don't know the English word, but like something they...
Oh, sophistry.
I guess you could call it
with
that.
Rhetoric.
But when it comes to real truth in their own lives, many people... Well, we've never been more people wanting truth on different areas. That's for sure. But there's still, like, conventionalism is to be in the bubble and wanting to be in the bubble because it hurts too much to take your head out. Like Carl Gustav Jung, we just had a show on him. Like he said, there's no coming to consciousness without pain. It's not for what did Schwarzenegger said, girly boys. You can't be afraid of pain. But we don't live in a heaven. We live in an earth. And here there's a lot of pain.
So just kind of dovetailing with what we're talking about here, I was of the understanding that your family, there's several generations of mystical influence, maybe like even a shamanist angle of sorts. Was I maybe a little bit off base with that, or what's the deal exactly?
You said from Runesoup.
I'm not sure I'd have to go back and listen to the interview again. But
well, I did, in Runesoup, I did mention, actually I mentioned that my family isn't very... philosophical at all. They are atheists or agnostics, so more political consciousness there. So obviously not my blood family, but I did mention a couple of things. For instance, I said I had a girlfriend who was a Noaida. That's the Sami people's version of a shaman. And I'm not talking about a man in midlife crisis goes to a weekend course, bangs a drum, and now he's enlightened. No, I'm talking about someone who actually grew up with it, like the Native American Indians. We have a native population too, all the way in the north, and they're kind of very similar to Indians, Amerindians, in that they have like teepees. They call it something else, of course. They have these interesting clothes and kind of a shamanic tradition who was actually befriending. They were cooperating with the Vikings back in the day when the Vikings had their Norse thing. So that's one thing I mentioned that I have. They look kind of, it's interesting, the Samis, many of them are naturally blue-eyed and blonde, but they still have these high cheeks and some of them have a slight suggestion of slanted eyes. Some of them may have Asian features kind of in their face, but they still come out with light skin and fair colors in hair and stuff. So it's an interesting, but they live or used to live, some still do, like Amerindians.
Laplanders?
Yeah, Lap. It's called Sami. Sami is a real word. Lap is the old word.
Okay, are these the people with the reindeer that the tie-in?
Indeed,
with
that's
the,
where Rudolph comes from.
Yeah, the magical mush. Amanita muscaria, Jan Irvin, who you might have seen around in YouTube and whatnot, Pharmacratic Inquisition, and even some people, you know, I think him and others, talking about how, yeah, that's where Santa Claus and his flying high reindeer.
Yeah, but Santa himself is really a Turkish saint. But it's true, all that, and the mushroom cult and all that stuff. Yeah, and that's traditional. That goes through, you know, initiation. But I also have like a kind of a spiritual family in a way, like you probably call it the mystery school, like a circle of kindred spirits. We get together and we do, I guess you could call it, like, for instance, meditation. Or, like, now, this is the first day of the new year. And like I told you right before we went on, I don't know if you're going to use that bit on the sound check, but that's a course for celebration. So we celebrate that.
I always, back in Canada, you know, I haven't been there in the last decade. I'm kind of like a de facto political prisoner here in Korea, really, because I don't travel internationally anymore, given the way things are with borders and customs and the treatment I've received at the hands of these people in the past. Forget it. I'm in their files. They've got records on everyone. And mine seems to be a little highly, maybe, if you don't conform and go along with their procedures and protocols, you end up in a special case file or part of...
Maybe you're really from Canada, not the States.
Yeah.
I thought Canada was a little more free.
Oh, God, no. Are you kidding me? Like, with the political correctness, mind control? Are you joking? Haven't you been following Trudeau? Like, what a gong show that is. What a joke.
It's just, he's the illegitimate son of Fidel Castro, right?
That's what some people are talking about. Yeah, I can believe it.
It's a very interesting conspiracy. I was reading it. What of all insane things was this? But then I was looking into it. His mother, and you know this better than me, you're from Canada. I didn't know. But his mother is apparently a famous person, and she was into Castro, and she met him many times.
More like Castro was into her is what it sounds like from the story here.
Or both, right? Yeah. And he looks so much like Castro. And now I'm starting, now we actually have something to link it to physically.
Yeah.
And that's when I was starting to, entertain this notion for real.
Do you know his mother's maiden name is Sinclair?
Right, exactly. I knew she was upper class. So that's very interesting. Sinclair, yeah.
Well, you know what that goes back to, don't you?
Oh, I know, because the Vikings and the Templars are involved in that too, you know? And then we're right back at Oak Island too.
You haven't talked to our captain yet either, have you?
Pardon?
You haven't talked to Captain Sinclair. You haven't met the captain yet, have you? Let's see if we can get him on the line here.
Oh, Borealis, Captain Long John Sinclair, yeah. I was miscanned by us already, so, yeah. Now, the Sinclair family name, very important here. Now, Justin and his mother, they're kind of, they're the black sheep of the family. If you want to get any blacker than us, of course, they'd be even a little more, we really
don't. Hey, I hear black is the new white.
That works, too. We're down with that, believe me. Yeah, so, but, yes, we bear no association whatsoever, too. That's really an embarrassment to the family name, the way that he's carried on. It's quite something, and we really...
Yeah, all families have their embarrassments. Just look at the human family.
Do go on.
Can't caught your tongue.
Oh, the captain comes on like that from time to time, but if we're talking the Sinclair family bloodline, you're bound to hear from him.
Hey, I'm all into channeling, if it's a cool entity.
I'm not sure where he is right now. Could be at one of the local...
But seriously, you're right. Sinclair has a very... You know that, of course, the bullshit that Columbus discovered America. They knew where they were going, and they were following maps. And those maps... Columbus was married into the Sinclair family. There was the Earl of Orkney. We call it the Jarl of Orkney. That's where the word Earl comes from, who was Viking people, because the Norsemen colonized parts of the British island, and so the upper class fused. So they got Viking maps of America to the Sinclairs via the Earl of Orkney, and that went all the way to Columbus. And we also know that the earliest, after the christening, and we're going to have a show about this if anyone is interested in this obscure part of history. Check a future show about how Norway got christened. It wasn't what we taught in school, that the Catholics came with the sword. We actually belong to the Celtic Church, which is very interesting, because the Celtic Church was allegedly founded by Jesus himself when he was with his father Joseph in Ireland doing trade. It's a very old church, was independent, just like the Coptic Church, just like many of these old Aramaic churches, the first churches. It was independent and was teaching stuff that had to do with Egyptian mysteries and sacred geometry and Pythagoreanism and all stuff. So, of course, the Catholics crushed them. And the last Celtic branch of the Celtic Church was in Norway. That's the first Norwegians. And those were Vikings. That's how they managed to get the Vikings to be Christian, because they saw this Celtic stuff, very similar to what we're doing, only even more interesting. So, and those Christians, those Vikings went to America, to Newfoundland, to Greenland, and they created maps this eventually ended up in the Sinclair family hands.
How about that? So small world. You've basically learned about this over the years via reading, via just talking with other people that you found.
Evidence. We have a Norwegian academic, he's dead now, but he proved, no room for doubt, we're talking cold, hard facts, that the Vikings were in Newfoundland. It took 50 years, so now it's getting mentioned eventually. That it takes a long time to get facts. Helge Ingstad. Y-N-G-S-T-A-D. Ingstad, a famous academician. And what about the Kensington Runestone? That's proven to be real. So you see, Sinclair was a sailor. They were seafarers, and you had to be. And the Viking descendants were, and the Templars were. That's where they took the treasure.
Straight out of Roslyn Chapel, Edinburgh. I visited there back over the summer of 1999.
Nice.
One of the few times I actually got a chance to make the rounds, and I had kind of journeyed and ventured and traveled about touring, doing music, mostly street busking and that sort of thing. Was in France and Amsterdam and Germany, and I didn't make it up to really, I'd had hoped to go to places like, you know, Sweden and whatnot, because that's where my family roots are, you know, as well as a number of other places too. But definite real strong connection there with Sweden. There's something I'll tell you a little more if you stick around for the after show, which you're kind of hinting at, because you've said all you've got to really attend to later today is pumping a little. We pump you up in the gym with Arnold and the rest of the guys. So, yeah, we. Which is
in my gym, there's no. I'm alone at that gym because I'm at a very small place right now. And they have a gym up for some elderly people in a home not far from here. Nobody's using it, about me. The elders are supposed to do it. Oh, it's perfect. I hate being on a gym where there's a lot of... Look, if there's a lot of big guys, I already feel inferior with trying to build my muscles. And if it's a lot of pretty women, I kind of feel self-aware. I look like shit when I'm making out. I don't want to do that in front of them. The only reason I'm pumping up...
Freudian slip.
It's to attract women. Because who says women are suffering from the beauty ideals? Men too, just as much. I don't care. I do it. I know it gets me results. So I'm a single guy. Hey.
That's really important stuff too, of course, the exercise, health. You know, I used to be into that when I was back in my hockey days playing junior hockey, and I was, you know, gung-ho. Yeah,
you're Canadian. Of course you're into hockey. So are we.
Yeah, right. Not me, though. It's a national sport, curling as well.
It is. In old days, it was the Soviet Union or the Canadians.
1972, man, that was like the big summit. In fact, we've got the Cold War podcast. I'm not sure if you'll be interested in checking it out or not, but that is definitely...
history.
That is definitely one of the conversation pieces that we're going to address, one of the talking points, the 72 summit. So, as well as Bobby Fischer in Iceland.
I'm into chess, though.
Oh, yeah. So those are two of the biggies that I want to talk to this. And he's coming up just in like another week or so, really. So we got to squeeze in our 100th episode. Just going to be a kind of spontaneous spur of the moment, maybe like live stream thing. Just get in there and get it done. And to get in the archives, you know, the 100th show or whatever. So we've done more than 100 shows, truth be told. It's just that we've lost count because I'm not sure if you probably didn't pick up on it, but we did as an Operation Secret Santa here just over the Christmas season. And I mean, I logged like, you know, two shows a day, which was brutal. It was like, I think for an hour each.
Yeah, I listened to one of your Christmas shows, but the guests started to fight. There was a fight going on.
Really? What the hell?
It was a woman. I think it was to do with the Trump thing. It's so strong emotions.
No kidding. How about that? Well, I'll have to go back in the archives and check that out. So, but one of the things
it was pretty entertaining, though.
One of the
people there made a lot of sense. I totally agreed with him. I forgot the details. I'll send you the link.
You're sure this was the Christmas, the Operation Secret Santa extravaganza?
No, I'm not sure.
Okay, it's a different show. Maybe we did like...
No, it was... I followed your link, the link you gave me. So I'm not sure if it's this Secret Santa thing, but it was around Christmas.
So, but yeah, Cold War podcast, tell you, man, those are two big things. You know, I used to be a Canadian patriot. I really was. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe like a lot of other Canadians, but I've just given up. I'm ashamed of our leadership. I'm not so much ashamed of the country as just the leadership and the government, I suppose. Same with America. I see why Americans are, it's not.
American, I love Americans.
Know. Yeah, exactly.
I hate their system.
Well, there you go. It's, and same as China. Same for me as China. The Korea, same kind of deal. Well, Koreans can be a little. You take the good with the bad.
You lived in Singapore, though.
I do.
Do you have more freedom in Korea than you would have in Singapore?
I got more freedom of speech here, I think, because I've been weed is prohibited here quite ridiculously.
Really?
Wow. North Korea, here's the irony, the oppressive, tyrannical regime of Kim Jong-un's DPRK, completely legal. If you can, completely legal. Now we've gone over this.
That's small.
I hate to sound like a broken record here. Regular listeners will think I surely am, but just for your sake and maybe people that end up, you know, from your end of things listening to our conversation here, Dennis Rodman, as if you follow the news at all, you'll recall he went to North Korea, visited Kim Jong-un. He presented him with Trump's Art of the Deal, the book that Trump wrote, supposedly, and his trip was sponsored by Potcoin. I've been watching this for a while and keeping my eye on things because I've known that pot was legal. Now, I don't see any reason why Pyongyang could not be transformed and turned into the Amsterdam of Asia virtually overnight. I've been kicked off of multiple and out of multiple Facebook groups here over the past few years because of sharing this, proposing this as an idea, and just a real shitstorm. Like, it's crazy. The Asia Institute, I'm calling them out, like a total CIA front, if anything, really. Best whole thing stinks there. So they got rid of me, and I wasn't even really causing trouble. I was just coming with these facts. You know, it's like, hey, by the way, check this out. Because here's the thing, you constantly hear in the media, North Korea, oh, we're so poor, help us out. Well, why the fuck do you not cultivate and promote the little pot tourism if you're really that badly hurting? Bullshit is what I'm saying. And it's all within the context of the New World Order. Jay Dyer has called them out. You've maybe heard of Jay Dyer, seen him around a little bit, as with, name dropping here, Giant Irvin.
He's the guy with the Hollywood occultism thing, right?
Yeah, Jay Dyer. Yeah, he's just totally sharp cookie and whatnot. As far as his integrity goes, though, that's another matter. And I'll share that with you in the after show, because there's just a little bit of backstory there as far as things like him stealing people's girlfriends and whatnot, apparently, from what I've heard. But,
right. Not everybody can handle, people get big heads for nothing. So many start out genuine and just goes to the head.
I lost a lot of respect when I heard this. Now, I'm pretty sure it was the fact, but it's also the lady is also, and I'm not naming any names here, people can research this for themselves and whatever. So, but it takes two to make these things happen too, right? So it's a long story. But the fact is, Jay, bright guy, very great analysis and whatnot. No, I'm not interested in having the guy on our show. I don't care. You talk about codes and whatnot, esoteric,
exactly,
cosmic codes. You don't do that shit, man.
You have to take some personal responsibility in your life. And if you have success, the easiest way to screw over your success is to let it go to your head. I mean, one of the reasons I'm still anonymous is precisely because I don't crave and desire any personal attention. It's just a detriment. Exactly. There's no advantages to it. Of course, if I was like that guy or someone, let's say, who did stuff like that, I would want the famous in order to gain on an ego level. But look, I don't do this for money. I don't do this for girls. Now, if I couldn't get girls, I'd probably try anything to get them, right? Sure. But I'm thinking, if you're going to be a man, especially today when the masculine role is in crisis, you have to have a few conceptions of that, what that means. And then you have to implement them. That's what makes you a man, not how you look, but what you do. And so, if you don't have any code, if you don't have any honor, I don't like the word honor because it's abused and misunderstood, but you know what I mean? Principles, ethics, a way of life. Because the real warrior is the one who overcomes himself, to spew a cliche. So work upon yourself. And if you like this weasel who you never got enough pussy back in the day and now you're doing anything to get anything, I mean, that's just sad. And women don't even respect that, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure if they're even still together. That's even more. That even adds, more insult to injury or salt to the wound or what have you. So
I see your Jay Dyer, and I'll up the ante with Jimmy Church. Okay, this is the first time I'm criticizing anyone on air. Okay. Yeah, because I've been very kind. I rarely go there. If you indulge me a minute here. Controversial. Well, who am I?
Censor. No.
Open mic, but nobody. Open mic. I mean, who am I? I don't have the power of injury. And if I do, all the better for me. That's a compliment, right? But this is just an observation. Take it for what it's worth. I don't know anything, but from what I see, I used to like Jimmy Church. He had some interesting guests. I'm not too familiar with what's going on in radio and podcasts, to be honest, but I enjoyed him because he was one of the better in Coast to Coast that I obviously knew about. But then I see how he flirts with all sorts of bullshit things, obvious fabrications. And I think he knows. I think he's so horny to get become famous and get into Gaia TV. He kisses the ass of that Gaia TV guy. I forgot his name, the one who runs it. And so I'm thinking people like Jimmy Church, they do the same as Jay Dyer, only he's not screwing another man's wife. He's screwing truth, if you see what I mean. He sells out to rub shoulders with whatever he thinks is something he want to gain, just to, you know, promote your own stuff, getting more popular. I guess it's a business decision, so maybe you should respect that. But I'm not into that at all, and that's what sets us podcasters aside from these career guys. We are here for the content, for the matter, for the sake, for the truth. We are not here to if we get some dough in the process and even some pussy in the process and whatever, not friends, connections, enlightenment, great, I'll take it. But that's not the driving force, and people can tell at some point when you've stopped changing priorities, when you're not into it anymore for the genuinity. You see what I mean? Maybe I'm just a hopeless idealist.
I'm largely on board with what you're unpacking. And we don't, as you can tell, there's no video angle to what we produce. We have no interest in that whatsoever. And maybe, as you say, at some point, but right now it's really
would reach more people. Did, by the way.
We would, wouldn't we? Yeah, you're right about that, I'm sure. So I just, it's like you say, it's like, hey, look at me. Isn't this wonderful? And
look, great. I'm dancing and singing and stepping.
Yeah, here we go. So it's just not a, I don't crave the spotlight. What I'm interested in doing here, and the whole history of how I even ended up here is quite the story too. So it's not something that I really stepped into all that willingly, but it more seems to have been a case of fate drawing me, victim of circumstance by some degree. I think so. Yeah, I heard a little bit about your backstory that you talked about today, but I've also just, you know, earlier as well too. And we're quite similar in the sense that we just wanted to talk to interesting people. We have
And you're anonymous too, right?
Well, Jaffe Ryder. You know, and so, there's no video, there's no face, there's just this voice and a name. So there you go, folks.
You don't even use a mask. We at least use masks.
Well, that's one of the things that we're going to get into is like, yeah, what's this anonymous thing? Oh, just check into his little staff and team here. And if you want to get into that, that's great. We're kind of skipping and jumping all over the place. You're trying to keep things more or less on track. And one of the things we did want to talk about with respect to the Coast to Coast Jimmy Church character was this business of Corey Good and David Wilcock. I've heard you comment and talk about
them. And he knows
them.
They are fake.
But let me just say, going back to Jay Dyer, I'm not dissing the guy in the sense of what he's producing or putting out, because I think his work is great. I think his analysis is great. I question his integrity, though, in a big way.
Yeah, but that's my point. You can screw over integrity on many levels. He did it on the personal ego level, but he stays true to the kind of subjects he's interested in. Whereas Jimmy Church, I have nothing on him when it comes to personal corruption. But he's selling out on another level, right? He's getting these bullshit people in, spewing out all these distractions and disinformation, and he's licking the ass of the Gaia TV people. Because I'm getting the hunch that he wants to get on. He wants his own show or something. That's why he's giving open door to all this Gaia TV bullshit. That's just my personal observation and hypothesis, so I'm not have privy to any inside information, so it's not even an accusation of sorts, it's just what I'm suspecting going on here. And that's another type of corruption. We are all prone to be corrupted at any time in our lives. And if we really want to be real people, genuine people, if you want to be yourself, find out who you are, what you are about, and stick to that in your life. That's my experience. When you open the door for corruption, all sorts of hell will break loose eventually. Look at Harvey Weinstein. He had a good ride for such a long time. Bill Cosby.
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton, even he, yeah, even Clinton, more and more people are aware of that.
Hillary couldn't even, you know, she could barely fill a coffee shop with the last presidential run. That was attempted. What a farce. Big media is just so, it really implicated in the worst sort of way, in the sense of, you know, they playing up the numbers, and even on the eve of the election, and this is not, people think, oh, well, you're bashing Clinton or you're criticizing her, so therefore you must be a Trump supporter. No, I'm just saying it like I see it, man. I could care less about any of them. I'm just trying to give a very objective report card to the whole kind of just general situation.
It's the forced dichotomy. It's a divide and conquer. And, of course, the sheeples fall for it. No, but it's the same thing. You see in YouTube now, they are unsubscribing. Look, if anyone listening here are subscribing to Forum Borealis, or if you want to subscribe to it, remember to check that you are still subscribed. Now, we haven't gotten into the worst trouble yet, because we marked most of our shows as education, and they started the purge in news. What's happening in YouTube is that they're unsubscribing people from independent media, just, you know, anyone with an account, and then they're subscribing them to stuff like MSNBC, Fox, CNN, all that bullshit. And people don't even know. So they just, oh, why am I getting this in my feed? And it's a long time since I heard anything from that show. What happened there? People don't check. People are distracted. People are busy. But this is going on. So if anyone are subscribing to my show or want to subscribe, please check that you actually are remain subscribed, because they're going to do the same with our show eventually. I'm not saying like everybody, you go from 2 million followers to zero followers overnight, but it's happening all the time, a little more, a little here, because nobody would subscribe to their mainstream channel. Can I say something about that? Look, I launched a hypothesis in the beginning, and now I'm seeing it come to fruition. So this is my claim to prophecy. I said that the mainstream, the reason, you see, the mainstream channels, mainstream media are panicking. So the crackdown, the, you know, YouTube gate, adpocalypse, all that stuff, it's a deliberate part of a larger scheme. And it's not even, this isn't even a conspiracy hypothesis at this part. It's just ordinary monopolism or corporocracy or corruption, if you like. And it's proven now by facts. In order to survive, they figure, okay, people are not reading newspapers, people are not listening to radio, and they're certainly not watching TV. So what's going on online? These are clueless people. They live in a bubble, right? So they see, okay, YouTube is the most popular of all the online platforms. You have other social media too, but for now, that's it. So what we'll do, we'll take over YouTube. We'll hijack YouTube. That's what they think. So they think it's about a platform. So if they can just get all that bullshit, CNN, MSNBC, just, you know, take the American outlet. You could say BBC and anything else too. Let's get that into YouTube and let's gradually take over. You can't do it overnight, because then you lose all the audience. So that's what they do. If CBS talk about Syria, they get ads. If Jimmy Dore talks about Syria, they take it off. He can't add, and they bury it. And the only way to find the show is for you to look up the URL directly. That's how they work. It's a double standard. They want to crush all sorts of independent, not just the so-called alt-right. Anything criticizing globalism, the man, what you call the new order, anything criticizing that is in the naughty corner.
That's exactly what political correctness is. And Mao knew political correctness. Hitler knew political correctness. Any dictator knows political correctness. It has very little to do with our, not so much our speech. That's just the start. That's the thin tip of the wedge, I guess, as the expression goes, just the start of things, really. But ultimately, yeah, it's like political correctness. I've long understood it and talked about it having far more to do with submission to authority and social conformity than speech per se, the way we use our words. That's a big part of it, the speech one. But that, it's more our ultimate.
No, but look, they're not really against free speech for the same reason they don't want Charles Dickens society, because in a Charles Dickens society, there will be a revolution. And when there's a revolution, their heads are on the guillotine and they're all about their own asses. So what they figure is, give them a few pennies to fight over, and we are good. There won't be a revolution. We'll just enough for them to barely make it, as long as most people are poor and we can have free labor and hijack the systems and take over the nation states and all that stuff. But it's the same in the culture. Let's give them the sham of free speech. And for the longest time, they didn't care about the internet because they thought it was just some weird basement dwellers gaming or whatever, right? But then they realized, Jesus, it's taking over the culture. We're losing elections. They're exposing our election fraud, WikiLeaks, you name it, right? So now they need to, they don't want to take away free speech. If you and me are in a dark corner where almost nobody is checking in, we can free speech as much as we want till we die, till we get blue in the face there. What they need to know, need to do is to disconnect our access to the masses for that free speech. That's what the, no, they don't want to do. So that's how, why they need to take over the means, not just the means of production, but of reach. So they're taking over YouTube, and they think in their perverse, alienated disconnect from society and ordinary human beings, that that's going to make it for them, as if it's the platform that's the problem. It's the contents. You don't want those artificial people sitting there presenting something, and now we're going to break, and we're reading from a script and whatever. Fake, fake, fake. Fake news, fake entertainment, fake anything, fake conversations. They want people nowadays, especially the young generations, and that's our hope, because they are taking over and the olds are dying out. They want what we are doing right now. No script, just discussing, interacting. And that's why they won't succeed in telling. They will only succeed in screwing up YouTube, and something else will come if it's allowed to. That's the other thing they do. They try to hinder stuff from coming, and nobody who has the power and the money is investing in it, which they would do if it was a free market. So I'm putting my hopes to stuff like Minds and these other things going on, and we'll see where that goes. I'll emigrate completely when I see something that can actually offer what YouTube used to offer. Sorry for the rant.
No, that's great. That's what we invited you, you know, on board the Robin Hood this week for, exactly that. We want to hear your views and opinions on a whole range of different issues, whatever they may be. It's never the case of myself or anyone on this end of thing imposing their ideas so much as just us listening to what our guests have to say. And of course we engage them and interact and try to do our best to keep it real, but I'm not sure who's the sound.
That's how we
board.
Grow.
Are we the sounding board? Are you the sound? But let's just
I despise echo chambers, actually. So challenges, no problem. That's why I love Alex from Skeptical. He's not afraid to take on anyone. Not like in a lame, petty way. I mean, like, really, the battle of ideas, like Ron Paul says, nothing personal. I despise personal. That's uninteresting.
Right.
But if someone is representing something, they need to goddamn defend it or move away. Even Hitler. You know what Hitler said? This is a very little-known Hitler quote, but I often use it. Those who are afraid to read the opponent's books or thoughts or whatever, how he formulated it, is just uncertain about his own position.
Aristotle.
So Hitler actually studied Karl Marx, he studied Trotsky, he studied all these people who had successes with getting. He knew what he was doing when he launched his movement. And so when even people who are known for being intolerant, right? Fascism, only our way or the highway. When even they can stand looking into alternate currents, then who are you, not you, but, you know, the rhetorical you, to shy away from that? So no, I enjoy a friendly conversation. But like I told Alex on Skeptical, I said to him, when you have on the mainstream skeptics, the authoritarians, that's the most entertaining shows, because he completely sinks them.
Alex was on your show, but you have not been on his yet. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, I see no reason to. When he was over in my show, I didn't even give interviews. So, and he can. I don't think he can interview me, because he interviews people in science and stuff. But when he has in on friendly people, that's when he has the most interesting debates. You see the distinction? It's more entertaining when there's a conflict of ideas. It's often more interesting if it's two people who can jerk each other. Like, have you heard my shows with Joseph Farrell?
Yes.
So I really disagree with him, But I think I have a role where I'm kind of, I mean, he could go on without me, of course. But what makes his shows with me different from his shows with others is the way I interact with him. Throw in stuff there. Of course, you have to be able to tolerate me. If you can't stand me and my voice, then you will be annoyed. But if you don't mind that, you can actually, there's something comes out of that synthesis. And that's a friendly thing. So you don't have to be hostile or critical, or, and certainly not just to be critical. But if you, my policy is this, if I genuinely hear something I disagree with or something I think I know is wrong, I will air it with my guest, no matter who it is.
Oh, yeah, sure. That's got us into trouble here once.
Problem is I'm picking so good guests, they're rarely wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we've been ghosted by a few people, the guests we've had on here. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the term ghosting or not, but it's just when people, they stop returning your calls, basically. They don't want to talk to you anymore for whatever reason. And then there's the shadow banning, which kind of goes back to what you were kind of addressing just a few minutes ago within social media, but that's a wider issue, obviously.
What was that term?
Shadow banning. Yeah. Shadow banning. Never. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, well, look, here's the thing. One of the reasons when it was inevitable, I saw myself being drawn into the fold here and not really, like I said, it's strange the way fate with the unfolding of events, how I was almost cosmically drawn to this position where I'm now a host on a weekly basis of this show. It's kind of strange and difficult, I guess. In that sense. But the way I set out when I saw the writing on the wall, it's like, okay, this is the way it's going to be. I want to be the best interviewer possible that I can be, because I've never done this. I've never tried it. Got a little bit of experience in journalism, mostly the printed, you know, with newspapers and that sort of thing. And I had a chance to join a
radio station. And you certainly have a voice for radio.
Yeah, but you know, that's not it, is it? That's part of it.
That's not enough, but it doesn't hurt you either.
That's right. That's a good start.
I know some people where it hurts them.
Right. You got to have a brain, and that's the thing that I'm constantly working on is my delivery, because I stutter a little too much, a little too much of the umming and the aying. And
that's only a problem for live shows when you can't edit.
That's true. These pre-recorded affairs, and we should remind people, listeners who are wondering or asking themselves, what the hell are we listening to here? This is Jaffe Ryder in conversation with Al Borealis, host of Forum Borealis. And Project Borealis, too, I believe. Episode 99, folks, of Pirate Radio Podcasts.
When did it begin?
We've almost made
99 shows. From when?
100 shows. We're right. And you're 99. What's that say about the numerology?
We've had some interesting numbers.
It's
a very last 100, then you begin all over again. Numerologically, 100 is the same as 1.
That's right.
99 is as far as you can take it.
That's right. You're the hierophant, the zero, the wild card.
Exactly. 9 and 0 are connected. That's right. But when did you start?
Oh, geez. I'll send you the Medium blog I put together, the whole kind of business of tying it all together, the backstory and whatnot. This was Christmas of 2015 is when our first kind of show, no, actually the first new year of 2016, I guess, was show number one, January 2016.
You're younger than me. Wow, I didn't know that. I thought you'd been going on forever.
Oh, no.
You're my junior. We started spring, summer of 15.
Okay, well, there you go. So once again, you'd been on our radar for a while, and you never know what kind of response you're going to get from people when you reach out to them and ask, hey, would you be interested in joining us? We, unlike yourself, we don't really go for the Joseph Farrells and Peter Lavendas, who I prefer actually Peter over Joseph, but that's another story, I guess.
They are quote-unquote big shots.
Yes. We don't go for those types, typically. I've kind of hummed and hawed, but look, man, this is all about... We're keeping it really on the down low in some ways, and I don't fucking care. It's the underground, dude. It's like the digital underground, you know. So we're sailing the high digital seas, but very much just in a kind of low.
Hey, we're the movers and shakers of culture, man. A trend starts like this. It starts in the basement. It starts in the backyards. It starts in the gutters. A trend, not fashion. Fashion is from above. A trend is something growing organically from below, and it starts with people like us having these kind of conversations, and eventually it moves into huge manifestations, like Clinton losing the election. Again, that's why you need to control culture. I always come back to this. And the good doctor, Farrell, has the same message. I agree with him there. It's all about the culture, man. If you control the culture, you can change anything. Look, you listen to us. You know our obsession with Bormann and the corporate Chrissy, right? If a Bormann is in charge and he eventually dies, new people are taking over. Now, if those new people are grown up in a culture where they're influenced by us, that's going to be implemented into the system. You see what I mean? So that's why the elite is in a bubble, because it's like they're cannibalizing. That's what they're doing in order to survive. But the bubble is cracking on so many fronts. So
look at Howard Stern. You heard about him? Maybe you didn't.
Oh, sure.
But talking about how, oh, podcasting, oh, these guys are just amateurs, losers. I mean, hey, I'm Howard Stern. I'm the biggest guy there is in radio, and I know how to present a show, and I really know what it's all about. And with the girls taking their bras off and flashing their crotch or whatever, riding the Sibian kind of.
I like that he pushed borders, though. I do like that. As anyone, you grow comfortable into a role, and he's not that innovative anymore. And even so, he's bound to be annoyed at the internet because it's kind of. He started in radio, and then he went over to that satellite thing, but he didn't see what was coming, and that's internet.
There's no substantive. You don't need all that he doesn't bullshit. Talk really about. He's a phony man. He doesn't talk about any substantive issues.
Yeah.
He's a total disinformation dude. Art Bell is another big kind of name, and I'm not sure how much of a disinformation he was exactly, but he did a lot for opening doors for people in a big way. So I would never bash him directly. There's many who do. You got to give credit where credit is due. It's kind of my way of looking at things. But I'd listen to what Howard puts out, the shows that he's done over the years and whatnot. And I can kind of, I don't mind checking out from time to time. But he could do so much more with things, really. And
he could.
Agenda setting and the way that.
But it's not about people being deliberate disinformation agents, because they are actually few and far between. You don't need it.
Spin doctors, too.
Yeah, you have those, especially mainstream media. But my point is, you don't really need that many agents. You only need what you called useful idiots, and then you back those forces. So the reason someone is rising to the task is not necessarily that they're planted. It's more like, we need someone like that. Now let's rig the system so that someone like that comes into that position. So that means that Art Bell and Stern can both have a function as a disinformation agent without even thinking that they are or wanting to be. That's why I'm more critical to Jimmy Church, because I think he knows, he understands, because he has sensible people like Richard Dolan, Peter Lavenda, Farrell, all those people on, and then he chooses to have on deliberate disinformation agents, people who know and are deliberately muddying the waters, like Corey Good, like this fame-obsessed Wilcock. But the usual way is that people are thinking they're not, but they just have incentives and priorities to back up the establishment, if you see what I mean. And why would Stern rock the boat? He's got a formula that works for him. He appeals to the, immature, childish, teenage, testosterone thing. So what I respect about him is that he pushed borders when it cost him. And that's why he actually became famous, because he was genuine. He's not that bright anyway. He would probably be bored discussing what we're discussing. But he took that battle for what it was worth. And the same with Art Bell. He, like you said, because back then radio was controlled and you didn't have internet. So we had a few outlets we could get. And Art Bell was one of them on those areas.
Oh, yeah. Big time. Yeah. Yep. So one of the words that didn't come up most recent round of conversation was gatekeepers. That's really, I guess, the big one there for sure. So gatekeeping and agenda
setting. We have some. Yes, yes.
Some media operators.
But again, I think many people are gatekeepers without knowing or wanting to be kind of, or maybe they just don't mind. But if you are genuinely convinced that 9/11 happened, like the official conspiracy puts it, and you're fighting for that, and you're getting feedback from that fight, you're getting rewarded, you get your own show, you get a fat salary, doors open up. It's the same way the Corey Good and Wilcock. No, they know they're lying and they're still getting a good deal. unlike Gary McKinnon or Assange or Snowden, they take the personal cost. So you have deliberate people like Corey Good, and then you have just people who are bought and useful idiots that do the bidding because they agree with it. Nobody will invest millions into what we're doing. That's because we don't have the right opinions. That's how you control, because it's too risky if a million people are in on something. Word gets out, evidence leaks. Even when millions of people aren't into it, evidence leaks. We wouldn't have WikiLeaks if that wasn't the case. It took one guy, Seth Rich, to expose the murder aspect of the Clinton empire, right? I mean, there was a lot of leaks before that, but this is the most solid we have to date.
The Clinton body count? Is that what you're talking about? Clinton, oh, yeah, Seth Rich, the Clinton body count, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was the leaker. He was the leaker, not Russia.
MENA, Arkansas. Go, you know, if you want to trace things back that far with Bill Clinton's involvement in the, you know, Gary Webb, of course, and George Bush Sr. out of MENA and the international drug cocaine smuggling operation they had. Well, there's a great movie that came out with Tom Cruise just not so long ago. And this is one further example, Art versus the Artist. Tom Cruise, yeah, as an individual, a little bit kind of a dingbat or a wingy or whatever. But as an actor, he's a great actor. In that role, I mean, he did a great job. So
what film?
Something America. What, Air America? Or they should do one on that too, actually, now I come to think of it. You know, speaking of drug smuggling and so forth, but... Made in America. He was portraying the Barry Seal, the infamous. Barry Seal.
I know the movie.
I haven't seen it.
Want to see it?
Have you? Yeah. You get right off of Popcorn Time. Okay. Download Popcorn Time if you haven't already, and do it that way. So, two things. One, this is going back a little ways in our conversation, but didn't Trump pardon Julian Assange? And secondly, what makes you so sure that Corey Good and David Wilcock are just flat out lying?
No, Trump didn't pardon him, as you obviously must know.
Okay, I thought I'd heard that he did, but I didn't.
No. Yeah. He should have. And this is why echo chambers are dangerous, because there's so many misinformation things in the Trump circles. The intelligence people have seen, they're afraid of Trump because he's not culturally a part of their. In terms of class and economics, yeah, sure, he's not a workers' man. He's as corrupt as all the others, but the difference is that he's a loose cannon. He was on the campaign trail. He was admitting and talking about, hey, I used to own you. I used to pay you, you politician, for this. It was so delicious to see him expose them. So he's a loose cannon, because the problem with Trump is that he's not the, lipstick on a pig like Obama was. Obama talked right.
Oh, yeah.
He did.
Oh,
yeah. Right. Sure. So then we can do anything to screw you over. But now we get a guy who actually shows you how everything is. And we can't have that. But then they also noticed that, hey, many of these Trumpeters, it's like a personality cult. You can't even criticize Trump. Nothing he does is wrong anymore.
Right, right.
Let's tap into that. So they get this conspiracy, totally fabricated thing about how Trump is now taking down the system, and there's not one shred of evidence yet. Sure, there are some battles behind.
Ivanka, what about the pedophilia thing with Pedogate?
Interesting.
There's been some headway made in that area, has there not?
I'm on the fence, because I know he was a part of that circle. Actually, he used
with the Epstein,
to
the Lolita Express, and
but I'm not sure it's because Trump is a pedo. I think it's because he always wanted to rub shoulders with the big guys. And they never accepted him. They always made fun of him. No, you're just a low-level used car salesman. That's how he was treated.
Trump's a chump.
Exactly. And so you remember when there was this correspondence dinner and Obama humiliated Trump in front of everyone and he was just sitting there?
Yes, that's when
I think he decided, this time, I'm going to run for real. Obama even said to him,
I'll tell you one thing, with me, you never get, become the president of America.
And so you could see him was annoyed, and he has a huge ego. I think he's a narcissist. And that's when he said, I'm going to fucking win this thing. And he did.
Yeah.
And
good for him.
Good
for him, because it's like.
Then he screws people over. He screwed the Scots over. That's how he became rich and famous.
With golf courses?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he has. If you look into Trump, he's very unethical business. That's how he became rich. He screwed people over.
Of course,
and he admits it. He says, look, this is my philosophy. You were stupid. I was smart.
Yeah.
So my point is, that's the same thing with Assange. Assange was a useful tool for him. And now that I won, why take the risk? I want to keep power. I want to keep this thing going. He's not an idealist. But fortunately, many of Trump's supporters have ideals. And they realize, hey, Assange is a friend. Anybody who wants truth is a friend. Because remember, most of the people who voted for Trump didn't vote as it's portrayed because they hate, like, say, black people. How could Obama win if America was at that level, right? It's all about contents. Trump said in the Rust Belt, I'm going to help you with this and that. He appealed to normal people. It turns out he didn't mean it, but at least he was a populist in words, if not in action.
Freedom of expression. Just say what you feel. Like, you know, this is America. Freedom of speech, too. Like, fuck this political correctness bullshit, right? That was another selling point, too.
And bother to fake it. She just admitted, hey, I'm the establishment, and you're going to vote for me. You owe me this. And she, you know what, how he really got into the limelight? Because I think it's called the Pied Piper strategy. They deliberately, the Clinton campaign, lifted Trump up in the beginning. Because they thought, if we give this guy a lot of attention, we'll just crush when it's, because nobody will vote for Clinton if there's just a shadow of a rational opponent. So let's put this terrible guy in. Let's throw this monkey wrench into things and we'll just wrap it up. That's what they were thinking. I mean, there's evidence for this.
Yeah, I've heard people talk about that.
It's so backfired. I'm glad.
No, I am too. I mean, fuck. I mean, he's no saint, obviously, and there's not many good things you can say about the guy, but, you know, it's better than having Clinton in there, so it is the lesser of two evils. I mean, there's nobody else, really, that seemed to be... Well, here's the thing that really... Well, that's another, you know...
America had a chance 8 years ago in the name of Ron Paul. The same people... Look, if Ron Paul got the ticket back then, he would win, because the anti-war sentiment was one of Trump's Trump cards. Ron Paul had that. The get the hell out of my face. People are suppressed and they know it. People thought Trump would help with that. And that would is something Ron Paul would have done.
Talking about like small government, hands off, laissez-faire, just let government have people's private lives.
I don't want this TSA guy's hand up my ass, for instance. On so many levels, do we have to spell out how people are suppressed? You who listen, you know what's going wrong.
Well, September 11th, you know, terrorism. So, you know.
That's another thing, kid. Like Joseph Farrell told me, if you're a part of the establishment culturally, you can go certain places and certain things you can't even go to, even if you spin it. Trump didn't care. He did. I'm not even sure he thought he would win. So he was talking about vaccines because I think his son is a victim of vaccine. He talked about 9/11. He talked about JFK. He talked about genetic modified. He went many places.
Not UFOs. No, he hasn't got nothing about UFOs. He's not touched that one at all. Although the secret space program, he's just in the last week or so, there's been a big announcement, has there not, about, the Trump administration thinks it'd be a good thing if we started, like, the Americans, that is, throwing billions of dollars into some off-planet space operation, just in case there might be some hostile aliens out there we could have to maybe defend ourselves
from. It sounds like they want to whitewash what's already going on. Wanted to change stuff, the only way you could do it was to whitewash it. That's how they do it. That's how they... let me explain this concept because it's so important and it happens all the time. I'll give you an example of what I mean about whitewash. Let's say that we have a certain kind of exotic technology and we got it in a way that can't stand the light of day. And so how can we bring it into society without admitting, without showing how corrupt we are and how manipulated you are? We have to pretend it came into being in a natural way. So out of nowhere, we get certain concepts and then they're integrated and then they're launched. Let's say we've been to Mars, okay, already. Now we want to, because when you do stuff undercover, the elite, it will always only be experimental and low key, low scale. It's very hard to, but if you get the whole world on board, then you can manufacture it mainstream. You can integrate it and you can really make money. So let's say they've been on Mars and now they want to start mining Mars and stuff. Then you have to make a artificial bridge. You can't say, hey, we've been on Mars all the time. We have technology to do that. And we, by the way, we killed the people who were there. You can't do that. So what you do is you start launching these private initiatives, Elon Musk, Richard Branson, what they're all called, Jeff Bezos, and the Skin Ranch.
Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah. Sure. Get all those people on board and then they start, oh, look, we're almost to Mars now. Oh, now we're first to Mars and now the second and now, bam. Fast forward 10 years, it's mainstream into the culture. That's how they've always done it. That's why there may have been anti-gravity crafts already back in the late 1900s, early 2000s, as Walter Bosley has indicated. So for at least 100, if not 150 years, it's been a show for the masses and then the real things going on in the real circles. And that's
why internet. Roswell, back engineering of alien technology, Lieutenant, whatever his rank was, Jet Corso.
That may be disinformation. It may have been human technology, actually. We don't know.
But here's what they say, that we hear about, you know, there's announcements that technology is being released to the public and up for general consumption, that for the most part, these items have been around for 20 to 30 years, at least. Anytime anything comes out onto the market or that we hear about, it's at least been around for 20, 30 years earlier. And they've been keeping it all hidden behind the scenes, secret, you know, black ops. And let's not forget, internet. Within the
timing, internet itself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Timing is everything, they say in politics. That's one of the famous maxims, of course, dealing with the political world. So that's some listeners, of course, if not already aware of, should keep in mind, because that really, I think, does apply in a big way. Roosevelt, of course, said there are no coincidences. But this disclosure movement, and that within the context of what, you know, I was just kind of raising there earlier about the announcements via the Trump administration, you know, there's been this recent, who was it, the American, he looks like a child molester, politician there with the glasses, he's based out of like, you know.
Oh yeah, Harry Reid.
Oh God, oh creepy. Yeah, yep. Ooh, Uncle Harry. Not saying he is.
That's
saying
a white voice.
Like, saying he looks like one. So, yeah, he does. You know, but you know, oh, by the way, and this was like right on the heels of this video that suddenly, you know, for whatever reason, made its way into the public sphere. That just a day or two after that, was it not that they announced, oh, yeah, well, we've got these black operations that were, it's a limited hangout.
Exactly, limited hangout is the word, because it's a, that's what I call a whitewash.
Sure.
Because it's a small scale. Look, yeah, we did have a secret space program, but it was just for 10, 15 years and it was just a few million dollars. That's how you start, right?
Just part of the picture.
So if Trump, when we say Trump, it's just a symbol. I don't think he knows half of what's going on in his own government, because now we're into areas where CIA people and Pentagon people are calling the shots. And Trump has huge insiders on his team controlling these things. So when I say Trump now, I'm not even sure Trump is aware of these things. But when that government, though, let's call it that, or that circle, if they are saying now, let's pump billions into space exploration, that's a the next step in the whitewash, because then it's like, we already done that. Now we have to start doing it officially so that people will get used to it. And then we can release whatever comes from that. I'll give you another example, so-called chemtrails, contrails. Now, let's say they've been doing weather manipulation and atmospheric tampering for a few years, because the technology is there. That's a matter of facts. That's a paper trail. You can see that for yourself. Now they're seriously, officially in the white world discussing doing this. They pretend they haven't. They're talking as if they haven't, but they're saying we have the means. Should we do this? How should we do this? That's what they're discussing now in science. They're discussing what the conspiracy hypothesis about the chemtrails has said all along. They're seriously discussing doing it. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that they have been doing it. Now how? And they'll probably be fucking up too. Now how can you whitewash that? Well, let's, you know, disclose that we are at the level where we can do it. And now let's start talking about as if we want to do it. And then we'll start doing it. And so when they start doing it, they're already doing it. It's the same as a false flag. You know that there's always a military operation going on while they're doing these bullshit fake terror things. That's because if something goes wrong, you can always point to the real operation, or the other way, you use the real operation as a hiding tool for you do the fake operation, military operation. You do that as a cover for the terrorist thing. This is something Webster Tarpley has talking a lot about, and it's a basic strategy. You see this kind of thinking going on. It's called social engineering, and it's being done on so many levels in society. And the problem is that we are the one being done with, and so we can't always know when are we just speculating without any evidence and taking it too far, and when is it real. And they even do that. They even manipulate that anti-Corey Good and stuff like that. That's when they launch completely bullshit stuff, so that sleepwalkers watching this thing, they don't even know they're living in a controlled world like that, or a corrupt world. And so we need to not make them wake up. So let's launch bullshit, which is obvious bullshit, and then scare people away from, oh, no, I can't believe these things. No, it's a forced dichotomy, like it was Clinton Trump. Oh, I either have to believe the official mainstream narrative, or I have to believe all these crazy batshit things going on in the uncontrolled world. Oh, it's much more comfortable for me to believe the mainstream. I'm getting crazy if I'm going into the other world. That's how they do it.
Absolutely. So, and that's going back to the conversation we were having earlier with respect to the presidential debates. That's one of the things I just wasn't able to finish. But the third party candidates, and that it's really quite criminal the way that things are set up and run there, without the Green Party or the Libertarian candidate or whoever, with the chance for them to have their voices heard as well, too. Because if they did, of course, everybody knows that they would pick up support and followers from various segments of society. And that's why they simply don't want to have that, because there's too many variables, I guess, that enter into the scenario and the equation. Same thing goes with these bullshit electronic, they call them voting machines, but I don't know really why that's even the case, because they're hacked and they're rigged. They can be hijacked. Yep. And commandeered within 30 seconds. There's your democracy.
It's been court cases. It's been university studies. This is facts.
There's your democracy, folks. So,
and I'll tell you why they are afraid of the third parties. It's not that they think that, let's say, the Greens will get 40% and win the whole shit. No. That's not the danger. The danger, you Europeans know this, because we have always 9, 10 parties fighting.
Proportional representation, too. You got proportional representation.
Many of us do. But it's a word called, when you're at the border of something, let me just look up this word because it's important. What's the word? You can tilt the election. Let's say the Greens get 10% and the Libertarians get 10%, okay? Both of them then can push the Democrats and Republicans towards themselves, because they need their support to win, to get the government. That's what they're afraid of the tilting position. That's a lot of power. We've had in Norway, we've had insignificant parties of 1 or 2 or 3% dictate the politics of the day, being more influential almost than the government parties, because they've been on the tilting position. They can make or break a government. Because
kingmakers, swinging the election.
Exactly. You're dependent on their support. That's what they don't want in America. They need a false two-party dichotomy. One party who openly admits that they work for the man and the system and the corporations and the globalism and screws you over. And another who does it just as much but pretends they don't. That's what you got going over there. What's worse, I admit that I'm corrupt and I don't work for you, or I pretend to be your friend but then I screw you from behind? You tell me.
Pure Machiavellian political power plays.
All use. Nothing new under the sun.
Al Borealis, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Sounds like, once again, we might be
already
able to... Hey, we have an after show to do here, too. I will challenge you to that. I'm game. I'm sure. Up for it. It's midnight here in South Korea. This, once again, just for listeners who are dropping by, tuning in, catching the tail end of things here, this is episode 99 with the host of Forum Borealis, Al, out of...
You want the name of my mothership? Maybe that's easier to pronounce.
Oh, and what would that be? Mothership.
Yeah, we have to see the revolution on Earth. You're so lost, Earthlings.
The name of the mothership is?
Well, if I told you, you know, Seth Rich.
Well, come on. Jeez.
Okay, it's Veritas.
Oh, Veritas. Are you tied into that operation?
No, what am I missing? It's Latin. Here? Veritas is Latin.
It's for truth. Yes, I know. Yes,
dead truth. Language.
Yes,
truth.
That's yes, right. Yes. And as I believe Pilate asked Christ when he was speaking with him in his presence, quod est veritas? Quod est, nice. What is truth? You know, so. Right. Truth is in the wine, is what I think. What some people
is in the grape wine.
Yeah, get add some alcohol. Get the that'll loosen their lips. But no, we've kind of overshot the mark. How we normally run things here, the 90 minutes or so, but that's fine.
Because it is 19. Show number 99 means you, in terms of number magic, number mysticism. That's taking us as far as you can. Everything reboots at 100.
That's quite something. So and I tell you, there's not too many, you know, you're going that extra mile here with us tonight, as am I. I'm going to, you know, pull out all the stops here and make this thing happen. But before we do that and, you know, slip on out of here and, maybe I should say sail on out of here to the after show, Rogues Gallery after show portion of things. That's for our Patreon supporters, the premium content.
Cool. Let's make it really interesting there then.
Oh, yeah, we're going to...
Everyone listening, we're really going to blow the bumps in the lost parts.
We're going to let our hair down and loosen our belts and just really...
Spill the beans.
Well, there's a few topics, talking points that we have here prepared for you, actually, things that just came up over the course of the conversation we weren't able to address, things dealing with, for example, 5G, the Discord platform or app, Pirate Party Politics. You know, there's a bit of a tie in there. We'd like to learn a little bit more about that here a little bit.
Hey, before we shut down, if anybody knows Rick Falkvinge, the guy who's created the Pirate Party, I'm going to start doing more politics next year when we have a bigger audience. That is 2019. Deliberately, I've not done too much politics because that's not that popular. Well, maybe it is. But anyway, building up. So I want Rick Falkvinge on. So if anybody, you know, if you're followers of him in social media, tell him, hey, you should really get on this Forum Borealis thing, especially when we started the political series. If he looks at our shows now, he may be put off because it's not too much there that he probably relates to. But we're going to do the politics, and I want to look into the Pirate Party. I want to do a show on that. You were talking about Iceland. Man, that's where the pirates are. And another thing, Iceland is a real Vikings. We've got in Norway, I'm sorry and sad to crush the American illusions, but we got the lineage broken long ago. There's no family here with lines back. But in Iceland, there is. In Iceland, they have archives and memories hundreds, if not thousands of years back. And they are really the lost stand of the old Viking spirits.
Maybe that's why the Muslims felt they had to, from out of the Barbary Coast, run slave ship missions to that island and kidnap as many of those Vikings as they could. So, anyways.
Oh, yeah, because the Vikings were used in the staff of in Constantinople, Istanbul, Byzantine. They were well-known soldiers for the lifeguard. And they were also hired in North Africa by certain Muslim kings and lords and whatever, so something to that.
We're
not Viking anymore, that's my point. It's a culture. The culture died. So we have to create a new culture, a culture of piracy.
Indeed, and that's what we are here for, is to learn about and to talk about the history of piracy, how it applies to and finds itself present in the modern age, and what we can do to kind of add our voices to, you know, enrich the general landscape as best we can. So without ending up in the gallows, of course.
But it's always a risk, isn't it?
Well, it's like George Carlin said, take a fucking chance once in a while, would you? So that's my kind of that's my policy. But anyways, yeah, episode 99. Thank you so much for dropping by, Al. We will talk to you again in the after show.
Ah.
I know. There we be. Having carefully looked over each of our navigation panel instruments, checking every level, switch, dial, cable, knob, and pulley, by all accounts and indications, we indeed see it's time once again to drop anchor inside Mystic Bay and draw an end to another week of Pirate Radio Podcasts. Remember, if you're looking for a little more lively online action, keep in mind we've likely got yet another great free-flowing Rogues Gallery after show coming up for the next hour in either Skype, Google Hangouts, or Peer.in. Also, if you've in any way enjoyed or found yourself benefiting from the shows we've tirelessly produced over the past 2 years, you might want to drop by our Patreon tip jar page and lend a little support. Half of all network donations go directly to charity. Help to keep those numbers growing over on Patreon, and we'll be able to extend even more of a generous pirate hand. Looking forward now to the balance of 2018, we're still not quite yet booked. So if you yourself have a new, novel, intriguing, or otherwise underreported idea, unique individual, or pressing item in mind, be sure to either drop us a line directly over on WPRPN.com or fire us a quick email via PirateOneRadio@gmail.com. We're always open to exploring fresh creative suggestions, intriguing guest ideas, cutting-edge discussion topics, and captivating themes. You can further embark on your own personal pirate journey by either liking, commenting on, subscribing to, or just following us via virtually any mainstream social media platform, including Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or Minds.com. So don't forget to become engaged. Until we meet again out on the high digital seas, I'm your host as always, the ship's chief communications officer, Jaffe Ryder. Tally-ho.